So you know me, I always do disclaimers. So we'll do another disclaimer. Am I on? Okay. First of all, I want to say that I appreciate the numbers of you that approached me in the last months and asked me about being an elder. I appreciate that. As I was going through the last month, that was weighing heavy on my mind. Thought about it a lot. I thought by saying no, that not only was I letting myself down, I was letting the congregation down, I was letting God down. But then I was tested. The last time I was up here teaching a class, I had three kids working for me, and it was heaven. They were wonderful. They were a joy to be around. They all left me on the same day, December 13th. One's off to college, one is trying a different career, and another one needed to find something with some health insurance because he has a baby on the way. So since then, I've hired two employees. One employee made it for 3 days, and fortunately came to me before I had to go to him, and he said, I'm just not cut out for this, am I? And the answer was, no, you're not. And then I have another guy, and he's got experience, but he's 50. I'm 58, so I'm not cutting him too much of a break, but his body's tore up, and he's deaf. He wears hearing aids. And one of my frustrations as an employer is having to say the same thing over and over and over and over again to young people with good hearing. Now I have an old person that can't hear, and every time I talk to him, he says, huh? What? He won't turn his hearing aids on. And so it's been a very frustrating month. And what I've found, because we always do full disclosure up here, is that I haven't always handled my frustration properly. Now, it hasn't been manifested in what comes out of my mouth, but it has been manifested in what runs through my brain. It has been manifested in my health, in my attitude, in my ability to focus. So I've been preparing for this Galatians class since I got done with the Philippians class. I was excited to teach this, but it's wearing on. And so I had to come to the realization, without ever having to sit down with Vicki and talk about whether or not she wanted to be an elder's wife, was that I'm not there yet. And I think that that's okay. I think it's okay. I think it's better for us to have qualified elders than to fill a position because the position is there. Now, that being said, I have lots of work to do here. I will continue to be a phone call that people can make and to sit down and counsel with people and to be there for people. To encourage people, to be what we'll consider a problem solver. So if there's division and strife and you involve me in it, guess what? We're going to sit down and figure it out. So understand that. I recognize the fact that there are needs in this congregation and that a small eldership can't meet all of those needs, and the rest of us men need to step up. We're going to study the book of Galatians, and we're going to see in the book of Galatians that Paul got a little bit harsh with these individuals, especially early on in the book. And we're going to spend some time talking about that, how we as a people accept criticism, how we handle when someone points out our faults. How do we handle that? You know, it's an intimidating thing to have your name put up for the congregation to review. That's got to be a little uncomfortable, right? Well, here's what I'll tell you about me. You can review me all you want. I want to know. If I'm not teaching a class the way that you feel like a class should be taught, if we're missing things, I want to know. If I overstep my bounds, I want to know. Here's what I don't want. If I hurt Eileen's feelings in class, which Eileen loves me and I love Eileen, so I don't think that's going to happen. I want Eileen to come and talk to me. Okay, if we're going to grow as a congregation, we're going to grow as a congregation, then it's time to put on our big boy pants and our big girl pants and start acting like the Christians that we should be. Involve our eldership. If you have a disagreement, go to them. Let's get things solved. Okay? And be comfortable. Our brother Dean, whose name is up to be an elder, he's got broad shoulders. He stood in a pulpit like this for a large majority of his life. He has heard criticisms. If you have questions at all, approach him. And then approach our elders. Let's do our part. So that way we eliminate any kind of grumblings, gripings, complainings, and we just grow as a congregation. That's what the apostle wants for the Galatians. So what I'm hoping for in this class, how many people have been in a Bible class now for the last year and have never answered a question out loud? Be honest. Put your hands up. No, put your hands up. Don't you hide from me. Okay, so here's the goal. The goal in this class is we're gonna have discussions. We're gonna open it up for discussion. But the goal in this class is to get everybody involved somehow. So here's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna pose questions, and some of those questions are gonna be really simple questions. Carol, don't answer them. Okay, let's get somebody else involved. It is really difficult to speak up in a public forum. Carol loves me too. I know that Carol likes to participate. Lee likes to participate in classes. Eileen, Kirsten, like to participate, right? And I love that. That helps me a ton. But what I want is for us to be less of a spectator in a class like this, because I think this study in Galatians, not Thessalonians, this study in Galatians is a really beneficial study. Now, there's six chapters. We could do it in 6 weeks. You went through Philippians with me, so we know that's not going to happen. We're going to take our time, and we're going to go through it. There is a lesson sheet on the back. You'll see the questions are very simple. We're obviously going to cover more than what's on that. But I want you to feel comfortable answering questions. Now, if you're shy, pick the easy question and be prepared. Shoot your hand up. Okay?
But it's so intimidating.
I know. I'm scary.
Wrong.
I'm scared. You know, it is. If you're not. So Bob and I, we can have conversations. And Bob's been in front of the congregation before. And so he knows. And not only that, Bob and I can both tell you, if you stand up here very long, you're going to get some criticism. Okay? Some of us are going to feel like, man, I've been a Christian for so long, I should know these answers, right? I should know this stuff. I will tell you that my memorization abilities are horrible. Horrible. And we could go into medical reasons why, that would just be my excuse, but I have some brain issues. You've known that. So I don't expect you to know book, chapter, verse. I don't expect you to know everything. But when I ask you this question right here, are we ready? Hang on. What do we know about the Apostle Paul? I'm not going to ask you who wrote the book of Galatians because he identifies himself right away. But what do we know about the Apostle Paul? What do we know? Where is he from?
Tarsus.
Tarsus. Okay. So that was an easy one. Those of you who are shy, you missed out. Okay. What was his name before he became the Apostle Paul? Andrew?
Saul.
Saul. Okay. When did his name change from Saul to Paul? There we go. Yes, on his way to Damascus. You see how easy this is? This is fun for me. partly because I'm obnoxious. And I promised that I wouldn't pick on somebody today. So I got to get the rest of you. Got to get the rest of you. I want to enjoy this. Not that we should be silly and goofy during a Bible class, but we should feel comfortable, right? We should also know that I'm watching you. And although I can't memorize Bible verses, I can memorize faces and places that you sit, right? And so if your hand never goes up, eventually I'm going to call on you. So pick an easy one. Pick an easy one. So what happened on the road to Damascus?
Jesus came to him.
What's that?
Jesus came to him.
Jesus came to him and what?
Asked him why he was a thorn in his flesh.
Yeah. Why are you persecuting me? What was Paul doing?
Murdering
Christians. Oh, Chris, go ahead.
Killing Christians.
Killing
Christians.
Enjoying it. That sounds evil, right? Why was he doing it?
He thought it was the right thing to do.
Yeah, he was a what?
Innocent.
He was a Jew.
The Jew.
Pharisee of Pharisees. Where did he study? Who did he study under?
Gamaliel.
Yeah, there we go. You guys are getting it. You're getting the hang of it. So we've studied Paul a lot in a lot of different classes. Have you ever heard any negatives about Paul?
Yeah, he persecuted the church.
Slow of speech.
Okay, go ahead. What was that?
Slow of speech.
Slow of speech. Go ahead, Bob.
He persecuted the church.
Persecuted the church. What about personal comments? I've sat in adult Bible classes in this building and heard comments of the man. We said that about an apostle. Do you know that there are people that because of Bible verses that we read will say that Paul was a woman hater? Yeah, isn't that crazy? That he was anti-marriage? You ever heard that? I listened to one member question the character of Paul. And I just thought, he's an apostle, inspired by God. But we have these worldly views, right? We have these feminist views. And so if you're a hardcore feminist and somebody says anything negative in your mind about women, then obviously they're a bad person, right? We want to have a clear mind. Why do I bring that up? We'll figure that out as we get into the book. Let me ask you this. Can somebody define what a legalist is? We're prepared for that one, weren't you? What's a legalist? Bob?
A person, particularly the Pharisees, who were so strict to the law, wanted to enforce the letter of the law over the over love.
Okay. So letter of the law over intent of the law. Okay. So the definition that I wrote down is someone who strictly adheres to the law, especially by focusing on the letter of the law rather than the spirit of the law. Let me ask you this. Is being a legalist all bad? Yes? No? No? Why not?
Because you see things, just because you see things black and white doesn't make you a bad person, but you're speaking the truth in some ways if you're a legalist because you're sticking to the law. Hey, that's against the law. You shouldn't be doing that. Sorry if I hurt your feelings, but that's just the truth and just take it. I mean, so.
You'd never guess she works in the school system. But exactly right, right? So what are we? What are we when it comes to Baptists?
Legalists.
We're legalists, aren't we?
Yeah.
So sometimes we take a term and we see the negative in it and then we just push it away. But as Christians,
As Christians, we have a set of rules to follow, don't we? And we know that if we follow those rules through God's grace and through God's mercy, that we have that hope of salvation, correct? And if we don't follow those rules, what are we guaranteed of? Yeah. So, again, as an open mind, right? We're going to keep an open mind. We're going to keep an open mind as we get into Galatians because we want to understand Paul's going to come at these people hard. And then I'm going to ask you, how would you take it? What if the elders came at you hard?
Might get your feathers ruffled.
Yeah. Can somebody read? Do we have our books open? Let's open up to Galatians. I need someone to read Galatians chapter 2, verse 16. Let's look at what the purpose of this book is about. Galatians chapter 2, verse 16. You know, I didn't even get my Bible out of my bag. I'm the teacher of mine. Once you have it, go ahead and read it loud.
The person is not justified by the works of the law, but by faith in Jesus Christ. So we too have put our faith in Christ Jesus, that we may be justified by faith in Christ and not by the works of the law. Because by the works of the law, no one will be justified.
All right. That's pretty simple, right? But what we're going to find, and we're going to talk about this, normally, I'm not a big fan of talking about what other people believe. Okay, but the benefit of studying the book of Galatians and the book of James, especially if you study them back to back, is that we get some answers for questions that we're going to face if we have a conversation with just about anybody. I saw a post on Facebook a while back, and it was a question from a guy, and his question was, are there any churches in town, this was on the Cottage Grove website, are there any churches in town that do river baptisms? And then he went on to say that he's been reevaluating his life, and he was baptized earlier on, but feels like he should be baptized again, but he wants this experience of being baptized in a river in the summer. And I was like, oh, I really want to respond, but I don't think Facebook is the place. But I did, because I apparently enjoy frustration, read the comments. And there were so many misconceptions. One of them we've heard here when we talk about baptism is that if you are part of certain religions, you will believe that baptism is something that you do after you're saved, just as an outward expression of an inward faith. Is that true? Can you prove it? You're going to be able to. Okay? It's time for us to take some notes. Preferably, how many people use a device for reading? Okay, you can make notes. Dean talked about this in the pulpit last week or the week before, can't remember. But, you know, he makes notes in his phone. You can make notes in your Bible. I was digging through some stuff and found my first Bible, which was just cruel. It was a King James. That is not how you introduce someone to the scriptures. But it's full of notes. Sitting and listening to classes. And then you reach a phase in your life where you think, I'll just remember that. Did you ever sit through one of Jerry Bassett's classes? And he just explains stuff so simply. I think, I don't even need to write that down. I got it. And then I'd go home and go, oh, I don't got it. Like, he just did it so smooth. Right? But when it comes to this topic of baptism, why? Because the world is searching right now. Okay, these three kids that were working for me, all striving to live godly lives, all have different backgrounds when it comes to Christianity, and had questions. And so these were conversations that we had to have.
We have to have answers. Right?
So that's going to be the benefit, I believe, of us studying the book of Galatians, is seeing how Paul addresses this. The book of Galatians is broken down into three sections. Look at these notes. Oh, I got to tell you, I got done with my last series of teaching, and you know what I did? I went out and bought an iPad, really expensive iPad. I thought, I'm going to learn how to do this. And I built a desk. I built a desk because I studied on the kitchen table, and that's where the cat thinks he needs to sit. When you study, it's kind of a pain. But I built it. I was full of ambition. Well, the iPad is sitting on the nightstand, and the desk is in the garage, and that's as far as I got. But we're going to try, and I'm going to say this out loud so you can hold me to it. We're going to try before the end of this series to somehow figure out how to work PowerPoint and to put a lesson on board. But if we break down the book of Galatians, chapter 1 and chapter 2 are arguments for the gospel Paul preached and his apostleship, right? So how many of us have read ahead? Like we read, we understand some of the issues that he's dealing with. Chapters 3 and 4, justification is by faith and not by the law. That's something that we need to understand, but we need to understand what he's talking about. We need to understand what law is. Do you know that there's churches out there that will tell you that requiring people to be baptized for the remission of sins, that's a work. You're not justified by that. So it's wrong for us to, right? So we have to understand the difference. How do we teach that? Right? Not that we want to beat them up, but we want to be able to have truth based on biblical information. And then chapters 4 through 6, exhortations to steadfastness, faithfulness to the Christian duty. So that's what we're going to get out of this Bible study, hopefully, if I do my job. That's always a question.
Hey,
yes.
Something else that we might be looking for as we're going through this. There are a group of people who think that you cannot lose your salvation. And the only reason I bring this up is because I was presented with it, that there's no way, if you're a true Christian, that you can ever be lost, period. Absolutely.
Yes. You know, Jerry used to talk, everybody has a name, right? Gnostics and all. And I just never cared to learn that stuff. What a mistake. Right? What a mistake. So I don't understand all those definitions. But yes, we're going to look at that. We're going to look at what the scriptures say. So that you have a set of scriptures that you can go to answer questions. We can't come up with all the questions, right? But we want to be able to walk out of this class, this series of lessons, one, being able to raise our hand and answer a question, right? And realize that the world's not going to come crashing to an end. You're not going to die of embarrassment. If your question is silly, I will only ridicule you for a little while. I don't have all the answers, so we're going to work it out. But I really do want us to get involved. You know, one of the nice things about this class that they have back here in the back is they sit around in a circle, so you're all looking at each other. Dave.
Okay, so I'm going to ask one of those questions.
Let's do it. Let me get something to write with.
Give me the summary again of the chapters. The first two were arguments for the gospel.
Yeah, so the chapter one is arguments for the gospel. Paul preached, and for his apostleship. Okay, we'll deal with all this stuff next week. We'll get into it, right? Paul is being called into question. Chapters 3 and 4, justification is by faith and not by the law. We'll contrast that with what is said over in James. And then the latter part of chapter 4 through verse 6 is exhortations. So that's encouraging the Galatians to steadfastness, faithfulness, and to Christian duty. So those are our goals. Will we get other things out of it? I hope so.
We'll talk about this a little bit next week, but why do you suppose the Jews were so difficult?
Because they thought they were God's chosen people, and they like to live by the law, and they like to have the preeminence.
So that's got to be hard, right?
If you think you're better than anybody else, that is hard.
You know, when you're an athlete or an aspiring athlete, and in junior high, you're the starter. You might be the fastest guy on the team. You might have the best three-point shot. You might be the best quarterback, best running back, whatever it is. And you get praise, right? And you get – that's exciting. And then what do? You go to high school and you find out you're not the best. And you're not praised. And your coach expects more out of you. And for some kids, that's a struggle that they can't get past. You're working for a company, and you've been at that company for years and years and years, and you've attained this level, and then some young buck comes in, and they know more, they have better skills, they advance through the ranks, and then pretty soon they're above you. That's tough for people, isn't it? So the Jews, as Eileen said, had this special covenant with God from the time of Abraham. So from the time of Abraham to this writing is roughly 2,000 years. That's some history, isn't it? I like to bring this up because sometimes we're really hard on the Jews. Sometimes we need to be really hard on the Jews. Can somebody turn over to the book of Genesis, chapter 17, and then read verses 9 through 14. Genesis 17, 9 through 14.
God said further to Abraham, "Now as for you, you shall keep my covenant, you and your descendants after you throughout their generations. This is my covenant, which you shall keep between me and you and your descendants after you. Every male among you shall be circumcised. And you shall be circumcised in the flesh of your foreskin, and it shall be the sign of the covenant between me and you. And every male among you who is 8 days old shall be circumcised throughout your generations. A servant who is born in the house or who is brought with money from any foreigner who is not of your descendants. A servant who is born in your house or who is brought with you with your money shall surely be circumcised. Thus shall my covenant be in your flesh for an everlasting covenant. But an uncircumcised male who is not circumcised in the flesh of his foreskin, that person shall be cut off from his people. He had broken my covenant." Then God said to Abraham, "As for you, Sarai, your wife, you shall not call her name Sarai, but Sarah shall be her name. I will bless her, and indeed I will give you a son by her. Then I will bless her, and she shall be a mother of nations. Kings of peoples will come from her."
That's pretty powerful, isn't it?
Pretty special, too.
Pretty special. To be told by God that you have an everlasting covenant. Now, there's other teachings that go along with that, but that's generally where we stop, right? We hear the I'm special, and then we don't hear the requirements for staying special. We don't see the history, but these Jews have believed for thousands of years that they were it. This is where it stops. Now, they missed the prophecies about the nations because they stopped. But if you have this history, if you will, that's passed on. Passed on. So, you know, it's tough to get your kids to come to church, right? It's tough. It's really tough once they get old enough to make their own decisions. But can you imagine? So they're trying to get their kids to go with them to the synagogue. We're God's chosen people, right? We're God. It's been taught. It's been taught. It's been taught. It's been taught. And then you have these scribes and these Pharisees that have this power that comes with that position, and they don't want to give it up. But what's even worse? So it's one thing to have this Jesus guy walking around with his apostles saying all these things, but now you've got this guy, Paul. And what did we talk about Paul? What was Paul? He was the Jew of Jews, right? I mean, that's like your starting quarterback deciding he wants to play volleyball. You are going to feel betrayed, right? You're not going to be excited about the fact he's a good volleyball player. You might even get a college scholarship. All you care about is the fact that your quarterback left. That's a power struggle, isn't it? So Paul, after his conversion, and we'll get to some verses. We're going to read some accounts in Acts when we start class next week. Just to touch on his, I may even have a map up here for Lee because Lee likes maps. But we're gonna look at Paul's journeys and how these Jews followed him and created problems. Did anybody look up when the book of Galatians was written? Can I guess?
58, 57.
Okay. It's crazy, you know. I think I'm working out of about 6 different commentaries, and then I've got 3 or 4 books. One of them is the book that Kirsten uses to study for classes. I think they're a great study tool. Eileen gave them to me years ago. But if you go to the map section, most of the maps will show Paul's first journey, then his letter to the Galatians, then his second journey. However, if you look at Barnes notes says there's no way to tell, but best guess was about 57 AD, which would place that writing between the second and third journeys. I tend, and I'm not a historian, but I tend to lean that way. And here's why. When we look at Paul's first journey, he establishes these churches in Galatia. On his second journey, he comes back through. And what is he doing? On his second journey, he has a letter, doesn't he? And he's going back around and reaffirming what's been taught and explaining the whole circumcision thing. Okay, and then between the second journey and the third journey, there's about a 7-year period there. Somewhere in there, this letter is written to the Galatians, but it explains the harshness that he starts with. So if I establish a church, and then I leave, and then the church starts to make a few mistakes, and I come back, am I just going to jump on them? Who am I going to jump on?
The eldership, if they have one.
Yeah. Those that should know better. Okay, and that's kind of where we're going to start next week. But if you should know better, right? So the way the eldership deals with me at 58 is completely different than the way the eldership would deal with Evan or Seth or Matt, right? Or Matt that sits over here. Babes should be different, right? Who's going to be held more accountable? Who are going to be less understanding to if I handle situations improperly? or if I stand in the pulpit and I teach you things that are inaccurate.
You're going to be held accountable.
I'm going to be held accountable, right? As I should be. So when we start thinking about how Paul starts in to this letter, and your homework, by the way, I forgot, yeah, homework. I want you to look at the first few verses of Galatians and compare Paul's greeting in those verses versus the way that he greets the Philippians, that he greets some of his other churches. Tell me what you think. That's where we're gonna start. Tell me what you think. What do you think is the difference? Why do you think it's the difference? That seem reasonable?
Good question.
You know, it. I'm a studier of people. I might not be any good at it, but I enjoy it. And as I look at the way that Galatians starts, and then you read Paul's response to these Galatians in defense of himself, you can feel what I would classify as a little bit of frustration. You know, and then I always try to take it and figure out how do I apply that to me. And as someone who's been a cabinet maker for 37 years, I don't know everything. But I know a lot. I've spent my life in a trade. And I haven't spent, when I started out as a cabinet maker, I worked with a guy. And he'd been a cabinet maker for quite a while, and he had no sense of evolution. He wanted to do everything the way they've always done it. And the way they always did it isn't always the best way to do it. So I've tried to evolve through the trade, always putting quality first, but then having speed and accuracy, put, you know, taking everything. And we would butt heads. And so I never wanted to be that guy that said, I've been doing this since you were in diapers. But I'm hiring kids, and I've been doing it since they were. I've been doing it longer than they've been alive. So when I show them how to do something, and then I show them how to do it again, and then I show them how to do it again, and I leave, and I come back, and they're not doing it that way, that guy that we talked about earlier that might not be ready to be an elder shows up. And is unpleasant. Those are the things that I have to work on. But the Apostle Paul has dedicated his life to the service of God. Right? Not just from Damascus, but dedicated his life to serving God. And Larry Haverstock stood up here one time and made a point that stuck with me, and it's helped me to try to deal with people a little bit differently. You know, no matter where you're at in your spiritual journey, be the best you can. Are you a Baptist? Be the best Baptist you can. Until you learn that you need to do something different. The Apostle Paul strove to be the best Jew he could be. Until he found out that he was wrong. And then from that day forward, he strove to be the best Christian he could be. That was his focus. So could it get a little frustrating to have these Jews following him around? He's just saying this because of this or because of that or because of this or because of that. Would that get the hackles on the back of your neck standing up? Wouldn't mind. I appreciate your participation.